This morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
The White House issues a pink slip. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. Tuesday, January 31, welcome aboard. Here's what's up this hour.
Acting Attorney General Sally Yates, a holdover from the Obama administration, has been fired. She told government lawyers not to defend a new executive order on immigration.
In a nationally televised address this evening, President Trump will reveal his Supreme Court nominee. It's reportedly down to two names.
On the first night of Media Day, ahead of Super Bowl 51 this Sunday, how the Falcons thought they might have given away their game plan.
And why it's becoming more difficult for today's young adults to buy homes.
A lot of times, you know, once you find a home that you like, which is a big challenge, it can actually, you have a higher chance that the deal is going to fall through, unfortunately.
Janelle Marte at the Washington Post on how it's becoming harder for millennials to purchase that first house. She's here in about 20 minutes. Failure to follow orders has led to the firing of the acting attorney general. Not that the Trump administration was going to keep her anyway, but acting AG Sally Yates was dismissed yesterday for telling government lawyers not to defend an executive order from the president suspending immigration from seven countries out of terrorist concerns. She questioned the legality. Meanwhile, demonstrators gathered in Phoenix to denounce the order.
He's making enemy. 1.5 billion of Muslim in the world.
The White House said Ms. Yates, a holdover from the Obama administration, quote, betrayed the Justice Department by refusing to enforce a legal order designed to protect citizens. Here's White House spokesman Sean Spicer.
I'm sorry that some folks may have had to wait a little while, but I think the president would much rather know that he's not placing a call to someone who was killed because of someone was led in this country to commit a terrorist act.
Dana Bonte, the U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia, will be acting attorney general until Mr. Trump's nominee Jeff Sessions is confirmed by the Senate, which could happen next week. President Trump has selected a nominee for the U.S. Supreme Court and will introduce him to a national television audience tonight.
A person who is unbelievably highly respected. And I think you will be very impressed with this person.
The Wall Street Journal says the choice to replace the late Antonin Scalia will be either Judge Thomas Hardiman of the 3rd U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Philadelphia or Judge Neil Gorsuch of the 10th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Denver. It's considered a crucial early moment for the Trump administration that could shape American law for decades. Senate Democrats, meanwhile, still upset over Senate Republicans' refusal to consider President Obama's pick, have not ruled out a filibuster for any Trump nominee. New York Senator Chuck Schumer.
If the president nominates someone from the mainstream who gets bipartisan support, that would be terrific. If he doesn't, I think Democrats are going to put up a fight.
The broader list of potential candidates was whittled down to a handful last week, and the Journal is reporting that Mr. Trump personally interviewed four of them. Well, from reauthorizing the construction of contentious pipeline projects to halting the progression of former President Obama's pending regulations, some of President Trump's executive actions have sparked immediate action in the federal government. Others have merely paved the way for potential future actions. Here's a look at some of them from Sarah Westwood, White House correspondent at the Washington Examiner. Sarah, any theme to them so far?
Well, certainly the feel is that President Trump has tackled some of the executive orders that allow him to deliver on his campaign promises administratively without the help of Congress. And that means that, you know, when he's bypassing Congress, some of those orders are more symbolic, like his executive order instructing agencies to stop enforcing aspects of Obamacare. And some are really concrete and finite, like issuing a notice of intent to withdraw from the Trans-Pacific Partnership. But all of them are geared toward delivering on campaign promises.
And explain, I guess, Department of Commerce and using steel for pipelines, U.S. steel, I should say.
So this is part of President Trump's America First trade and economic policy. He's saying that he wants to implement a policy that would require new and retrofitted pipeline construction projects to only use U.S. steel and U.S. equipment. Now, that would be a pretty complex policy to implement. And so while the White House is sort of touting that executive action as a success that's already been completed, it's actually just asking his Commerce Secretary to perform a review of how they might possibly go about implementing such a policy. So it's really just a harbinger of what might be to come. It's not necessarily creating that policy out of thin air.
Okay. And then what about streamlining permits as one of your points here, too?
These are all sort of parts of executive actions that are asking his agencies to put together ways that the administration can go about pursuing these policies, and some of these might take a while to get off the ground. He asked his agencies, in addition to develop a plan to defeat ISIS, to come up with ways they can build up the military, to streamline permits and expedite environmental reviews. But all of these policies are really just getting the wheels moving on how they might achieve this in the future. Many of them don't have immediate effects.
Mm. We're speaking with Sarah Westwood, White House correspondent at the Washington Examiner. Her piece is called The Guide to Trump's First 17 Executive Orders. We're looking at a handful of them. How about the border wall with Mexico?
Well, this is one that has generated a lot of controversy, and it has throughout the whole campaign. Essentially, what President Trump did was instruct the Department of Homeland Security to tap into its existing resources, its existing appropriations for border security, and use that to start building the wall with the understanding, obviously, that down the line, Mexico is somehow going to pay for it, somehow going to reimburse American taxpayers. Now, that order was a little bit broader than just the wall. It also called for the expansion of detention centers along the border. It called on Border Patrol agents to start enforcing all the immigration laws on the books, because there had been, during the Obama administration, sort of these informal marching orders that some immigration policies didn't need to be enforced consistently across all parts of the U.S. Donald Trump, he's aiming to eliminate that selective enforcement, get them all the laws enforced across the books, and that's in keeping with his hardline stance on immigration that he had throughout the campaign.
Got it. All right, a couple of ones kind of deeper on your list involve freezes. One, the hiring freeze, and then the regulatory freeze. Can you explain those?
Sure. One is pausing across the board, exception of the military, the creation of new government positions or filling vacant ones. He's putting a freeze on hiring across the board, and that's something that's pretty typical of incoming presidents. Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, they also implemented hiring freezes. The regulatory freeze is halting all rules that are pending from the Obama administration, saying, let's not finalize these. We're going to put a stop to the creation of regulations right now while we get a handle of where we want to take our own regulatory framework. And so these are sort of routine moves that incoming presidents will often do when they want to stop the progression of their predecessor's agenda, when they want to start implementing their own.
Thanks, Sarah. Sarah Westwood, White House correspondent at the Washington Examiner. 15 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Good Tuesday to you. Canadian authorities have charged a 27-year-old man with 6 counts of first-degree murder for a shooting rampage Sunday night at a mosque in Quebec City. His name is Alexander Bissonnette, son of a retired Quebec bureaucrat whose Facebook page identified him as a student of political science and anthropology at Laval University. The police, who said Mr. Bissonnette was also charged with 5 attempted murders, did not offer a possible motive. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau in Parliament yesterday called it a terrorist attack on innocents targeted for practicing their faith.
It was an attack on our most intrinsic and cherished values as Canadians, values of openness, diversity, and freedom of religion.
Six people killed, several others wounded during the assault at the Quebec Islamic Cultural Center. The attack took place only a day after Mr. Trudeau earned international attention for proudly describing his country as a welcoming home to refugees. 21 minutes after the hour on This Morning, Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Word in the message is loud and clear. Anyone who refuses to carry out President Trump's orders will likely be fired, just hours after acting U.S. Attorney General Sally Yates publicly questioned the constitutionality of Trump's refugee and immigration ban and refused to defend it in court. The administration released a statement saying she had been fired. Trump replaced Yates with longtime federal prosecutor Data Binte, the U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia. When President Trump paused the nation's refugee program with a stroke of a pen, top congressional leaders of his own party were left to find out the same way the general public did from the media. Senator Marco Rubio says he struggled to gather details for constituents about the temporary halt to all refugee admissions as well as immigration from seven Muslim-majority nations.
My staff was told the State Department, as of today, was ordered, you know, not to talk to Congress about this issue.
Next followed news that lawmakers were not consulted about the executive order. But while some in the GOP have been critical, House Speaker Paul Ryan and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell have remained largely supportive. A new study finds school shootings rise when the economy tanks, even as violent crime in general appears to be unaffected. Researchers analyzed data from 379 shootings in schools between 1990 and 2013 and found a link between changes in national and local unemployment rates and the frequency of shootings. The study is published in the journal Nature Human Behavior. Well, the Super Bowl sideshow known as Media Night was full of the unusual, as usual. Falcons wide receiver Julio Jones was asked if he's a good cook. Coach Dan Quinn was asked who on his team has the best sense of humor. But the headline grabber came from a 7-year-old reporter who asked Patriots quarterback Tom Brady who his role model is.
Well, I think my dad is my hero because he's someone that I look up to every day. And, my dad.
Brady, who got choked up there, then nodded his head and gave a thumbs up to the questioner who was on hand after winning a Kid Reporter contest.
Please don't run those stories about Tom Brady because I do not want to like him.
Come on.
Okay? I'm a Jets fan and I do not want to hear heartwarming stories about Tom Brady because then I might crack and start to like him. So please.
Come on.
Refrain.
Come on. Lots of Rutgers guys on that Patriots team.
Oh, my goodness. A whole secondary, right?
You got to cheer for the Patriots.
Stop it. 23 minutes after the hour. Glad you're with us. Young people can face a lot of challenges when it comes to buying their first home, and that list of things may be growing. Recent data from Trulia found that people buying starter homes or those in the bottom third of home values for their market can also have a harder time closing on their mortgages or finding a home they can afford. Here's Janelle Marte, who runs Get There, a personal finance section of the Washington Post. Janelle, what do we have?
So, of course, it's always difficult for young people to buy homes. Typically, when you're younger, you're not at your maximum earning potential, and so you might have a hard time saving for the down payment and all of that. But there are actually a couple of things. There were a few reports released recently that showed even more specifically the challenges that young people are facing when it comes to reaching this big financial milestone.
All right, so the thing that comes to mind for me, at least, you know, conversations you and I have had in the past is kind of the debt these folks sometimes have after college, for example. Is that an issue here?
Well, that's one of the challenges that we've always known about. But one thing that came out from another report is that a lot of times, you know, once you find a home that you like, which is a big challenge, it can actually, you have a higher chance that the deal is going to fall through, unfortunately. So there was a report that came out from Trulia this month, and it found that the share of home sales that fall through is on the rise. And, you know, that would mean that you have a listing that then goes to pending, meaning there's been an offer that's being considered, and then it comes back to being listed for sale, meaning that that offer fell through. And for starter homes, which is typically what people in their 20s and their 30s are going to go for, right, for that first-time home buyer, the fail rate was much higher. It was 7% of deals that fell through at the end of last year, and that compared to 4% for the 4% of all sales that fell through according to Trulia. So you could see that it's much higher for starter homes than for younger people in general.
How much of an issue is, say, the type or amount of inventory of homes available?
That is actually a good thing that you're bringing that up. So for younger people, again, the another big challenge is even finding a home that is in your budget or that you can afford and that that is within reach for someone who's buying that first home.
Janelle Marte at the Washington Post. 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Transition seamlessly from presentation to meeting and from work to home with the Dell Latitude 13 7000 series, the laptop that takes care of business. The powerful performance and incredible battery life from this reliable business-class PC featuring Intel Core processors lets small business employees do their best work wherever work takes them. Learn more at Dell.com/radio. That's Dell.com/radio.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Tuesday, January 31, Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines: Acting Attorney General fired for fighting the immigration executive order. Trump to name his Supreme Court pick today. Last day to sign up for Obamacare. The supermarket chain Kroger is making an opioid overdose antidote available without a prescription. A hotel in Austria paid $1,800 in ransom to hackers who locked guests out of their rooms by taking over the keycard machine. And why the Falcons thought their Super Bowl game plan was stolen. That story in about 20 minutes. When Rex Tillerson becomes Secretary of State, possibly tomorrow or Thursday, he's facing uncertainty that's almost unmatched in recent memory. Wall Street Journal reporter Jay Solomon says Mr. Tillerson, once confirmed by the Senate, is facing a host of national security issues and questions about President Trump's ability to unify his diplomatic and military corps behind his foreign policies. Jay, what's he looking at?
Well, Tillerson is taking over a State Department in which we've seen a lot of officials just in the last 2 days kind of openly voice dissent against some of the Trump administration policies, particularly the immigration ban that was announced over the weekend. There was over 100 career State Department officials who signed a letter of dissent in the last 2 days to voice opposition to this policy. So Tillerson is basically taking over an institution that is in many ways in revolt. And in the last week, a lot of senior management from the State Department were either removed or resigned. So he's taking over an institution that's very much in tumult.
Is this common that there's some sort of revolt like this by 100 or so folks?
You know, there was a case last year where the State Department staff wrote what's called a dissent letter against the Obama administration's Syria policy. So there have been, you know, cases in the past, both Republican or Democrat, where there's like a formal protest within the institution. So it's not like it's never happened before, but it's a really difficult time for Rex Tillerson to come in with so much of the staff, senior staff, cycled out, concerns over the Trump policy within the bureaucracy, and then Donald Trump's sort of very much committed to taking policies that are not kind of traditional in Washington.
You get a sense of how Mr. Tillerson will handle this?
You know, it's kind of hard. He's been the head of ExxonMobil, so he developed a reputation for being, you know, a bit of a tough guy, a tough negotiator. It's hard to get a sense on, at least through his hearings, how he plans to tackle foreign policy. I think the general sense is he's not going to be like the outgoing Secretary of State, John Kerry, who kind of flew to every hot spot at the drop of the hat to try to negotiate ceasefires or peace agreements with very mixed results. I think the sense is he's going to be a bit more guarded in his diplomacy. He's, you know, President Trump has very much focused on the war against Islamic State, trying to engage with Russia in some ways. He's voiced a lot of skepticism towards the Iran nuclear deal. So my sense is that Tillerson is probably going to be a bit more focused than Kerry was, and a little bit less of a jet setter.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal foreign affairs correspondent Jay Solomon about his piece called Tough Tasks Await Tillerson at State Department. So you touched on a little bit with the, like the Iran nuclear deal, but I mean, Russia, China, the Mexican border wall, right? These immigration rules, obviously, over the weekend. Israeli embassy moving perhaps from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. How do you begin to tackle this stuff?
No, it's going to be really difficult because there's just so many different hotspots, and there's not kind of a really clear philosophy kind of bringing this all together. I do think if Tillerson starts on Wednesday or Thursday, the Mexico issue is going to be very hot. But again, it's unclear. Is he going to be the type of Secretary of State to fly down there and try to repair relations really fast? That doesn't seem to be the kind of overarching strategy that the President of the White House seems to be employing. They seem to kind of want confrontation.
Thanks, Jay. Jay Solomon, Wall Street Journal reporter from Washington. It's 21 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. Welcome into a Tuesday beyond the headlines now. This morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, it's officially pothole season, and if you've managed to keep all four tires inflated so far this winter, beware. A Canadian news crew filming footage of pothole problems ran into an admittedly predictable problem. A pothole gave them a flat. CBC Newfoundland and Labrador said a crew was out filming potholes on busy roads when their van struck one of the large holes, causing a flat tire. The crew ended up having to call a tow truck, like many other area residents who complained about the massive potholes in the first place. The Department of Transportation said the massive potholes were caused by heavy freezing rainfall last week.
Yeah,
I noticed that here in New Jersey as well. We had some freezing rain last week, and then the day after, driving here, I ran into about, you know, six or seven new craters that I didn't remember the last time I driven in.
Ice expands, right?
Yes.
That's the problem.
Yes,
ice expands, causes bigger potholes. And the last time New Jersey, I think, spent money on infrastructure was, I don't know, 1928 or so.
Right.
I think, yeah.
Right.
Was that's what it feels like on some of these roads.
Was it Woodrow Wilson? Is that who was president?
Right.
Yeah.
And we're not alone. I know
right.
New Jersey is not alone in that.
And this should come as little surprise for anyone outside of New England, but the Patriots, for the second straight year, are the most disliked team in the NFL. This according to a new poll taken last week and released yesterday by Public Policy Polling. In the poll taken of 378 NFL fans representative of the U.S. population, 21% of people dislike the Patriots, once again edging out the Dallas Cowboys, who came in at 19%. Also among the findings, Tom Brady is both the most popular and least popular quarterback in the NFL. Patriots coach Bill Belichick is also viewed negatively by 34% of those polled, while only 8% of those polled said they didn't like the Falcons coach Dan Quinn. I mean, how many of them could actually name who the Falcons coach was?
I was just going to say that. 8% didn't like him, but only 2% could actually identify
who
he
was. Good news for Belichick, though. He's not as disliked as NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell, as 37% said they thought of him unfavorably and 42% disapproved of the job that he was doing. So there you go. You were looking for reasons to not like Tom Brady and the Patriots. You said you were almost starting to like them, just a tiny, tiny little bit.
I've always had the respect.
Yeah. You know,
Tom Brady is a tremendous competitor.
You got to respect the winning for sure. But now look, you know, now the rest of the country feels the way you do, so you can feel okay about still not liking the Patriots.
By the way, with the lack of Patriots love, does that elevate the New York Jets as America's team? Stop laughing. Is that what this survey found?
Yeah, I saw nothing about the Jets or the phrase America's team anywhere on this survey.
So you referenced Brady and Belichick and Goodell.
Yeah.
How about the prospect of Goodell handing the Super Bowl trophy? Not dismissing the Falcons, how about the possibility of Goodell handing a trophy to Belichick and or Brady?
That's really the main reason for watching this game, and DVR needs to be running so you can watch that over and over again.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you, Mike. It's 14 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. A new study finds we might be losing ground in the effort to get people to quit smoking. A report by a group called the Population Assessment of Tobacco and Habits, or PATH, has released data showing that more than 1 in 4 American adults and nearly 1 in 10 youths still use tobacco. But even as use of traditional cigarettes has dropped, high school students' use of e-cigarettes grew from 1.5% in 2011 to 16% last year. We've now seen 53 years of warnings from the U.S. Surgeon General on the dangers of smoking, with countless anti-tobacco laws and campaigns. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
When an acting attorney general, Dana Binte, is ordering the Justice Department to do its sworn duty and defend President Trump's executive order on immigration and refugees. Binte was named to the job last night after Trump fired Sally Yates, a Democratic appointee who had publicly questioned the constitutionality of the executive order and directed Justice Department attorneys not to defend it in court. Yates said she was not convinced it is lawful or consistent with the agency's obligation to stand for what is right. More than 100 State Department diplomats and officials have signed a draft document formally protesting President Trump's immigration ban, provoking a caustic rebuke from the White House and exposing deep divisions within the new administration. White House spokesman Sean Spicer says career bureaucrats who don't support Trump's policy should consider leaving government. The State Department employees, in a dissent letter, warned the White House that its decision to temporarily ban immigration from 7 Muslim countries could undercut U.S. counterterrorism operations and threaten national security. Alexander Bissonnette has been identified as the suspect in a shooting at a Quebec City mosque Sunday night that killed 6 and injured 8 others. The 27-year-old has been charged with 6 counts of murder and 5 counts of attempted murder. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau called it an act of terrorism.
To the more than 1 million Canadians who profess the Muslim faith, I want to say directly, we are with you and know that we value you.
Former classmates of Bissonnette says he is a political conservative who has anti-immigrant views. Transgender children who identify as boys will now be allowed to join the Boy Scouts. Until yesterday, the organization previously only allowed children registered as male on their birth certificate to join their ranks. The change comes after a transgender 8-year-old was asked to leave the Scouts in New Jersey last year. And it's not just what you eat, it's also when you eat. The American Heart Association says eating more of your calories early in the day may help keep the heart healthy. Studies show that eating earlier, when your body can better metabolize food, lessens heart disease risks like obesity, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol.
It sounds goofy, but I am a believer in that.
Have a big breakfast.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Salt bagel with sausage, egg, and cheese.
No, you don't eat that.
I do.
No, you don't.
Butter, pepper, and ketchup.
No, you don't.
Side of orange juice. 6 minutes in front of the hour. There was some serious drama that unfolded for about 15 minutes following the media session on the first night of Super Bowl week. At the end of the Falcons meeting with reporters, offensive coordinator Kyle Shanahan, who will soon be the next head coach of the 49ers, was sent scrambling on a lost and found adventure. Turns out he lost track of his backpack. And it's not so much that he might have had his wallet and keys in there. He told USA Today that the backpack included the Falcons' game plan for Super Bowl 51 this Sunday. As the drama unfolded, Shanahan paced Minute Maid Park in Houston looking for clues. But before you suspect the Patriots were behind this, lighten up. Shanahan's bag was mistakenly lifted by San Francisco Examiner columnist Art Spander, who left his backpack at the site where reporters had gathered to interview Shanahan. Mr. Spander, by the way, who's 78, is covering his 40th Super Bowl. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.